Good morning, Your Honor. May I please reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal? May it please the Court. My name is Doug Tingvall, and I represent Kent Hill Plaza, the landlord in this case. This is a classic case of ships passing in the night. There's simply no meeting of the minds on this lease because the lack of an agreement as to what the court found was an essential term of the lease agreement, i.e., whether the tenant could compel the landlord to relocate the RTUs, rooftop units, for the HVAC system. This morning, I'll focus on three issues. The first issue is that the lease lacked essential elements of an enforceable contract, such that no contract was created and the court should have left the parties where it found them. Secondly, that the lease was not sufficiently definite to grant specific performance even if a contract was formed. And third, that assuming a contract was formed, did the tenant have the right under the terms of the lease to mandate that the RTUs be relocated on this 40-year-old building?
Lacked essential terms, could your client retain the rent paid by Kent Hill Plaza?
No, we would have to return it. It would be a complete restitution.
Your client's never done that, has it?
Didn't learn about the requirement for relocation of the RTUs until a meeting occurred several months after the lease was signed.
Is there any evidence of record your client ever tendered the rent back?
No. The first issue, the other issue I want to address before I address the merits of the three arguments is the standard of review, because the tenant's attorney talks about the appropriate standard of review as being abuse of discretion, and that's just one part of it. With three issues, there are different standards of review applicable to each. Whether a contract was created is reviewable de novo as an issue of law. It's not substantial evidence. It's not abuse of discretion. It's whether, it, as a matter of law, was a contract created or not. Second issue on specific performance, that is reviewed by an abuse of discretion standard. In other words, it's a two-part decision. Does the contract exist? If yes, then you go to the remedy. Because specific performance is not a theory or cause of action, it's a remedy. And it's premised upon an existing contract being formed.
Well, to say that there was no contract, don't we have to read the provision that the tenant shall submit a design for the HVAC system as, and that design is subject to review before this lease is enforceable? Don't we have to read that into the contract and modify the contract to get where you want to be?
No, it didn't say that, and it probably should have said that if the design didn't exist at the time. But at a minimum, even without the lease making it conditioned upon review and approval of the plans and specs in a typical, more systematic process, the tenant knew all along that it was going to require the RTUs to be relocated.
Okay, but you're not proving fraud, so what I'm saying is, aren't we sitting here with a contract?
No, not proving fraud, but lack of good faith, which is very close to fraud in this case, because in every contract there's an implied duty of good faith. And in this case, as between landlord and tenant, the tenant knew what its intentions were all along, because it had hired an architect who was actually worked for Planet Fitness, the franchisor, who had designed 350 of these various facilities and knew full well, and had visited the site in May, the month before the lease was signed. So he knew at the first visit that he would require the RTUs to be relocated in order to fit in with the scheme of the Planet Fitness design and concept. And yet he prepared a schematic, one-page schematic, that showed the outline of the HVAC that for the first time disclosed the relocation requirement a month after, actually only two and a half weeks after the lease was signed. Now, our position is that given that secret knowledge, not alleging fraud, but alleging lack of good faith, as between the two parties, who had the superior knowledge? The tenant. Because there was no discussion, and the trial court found there was no discussion of relocating the RTUs before the lease was signed.
Certainly your client had the ability to cap the expense, have prior approval, not sign the agreement until they had a copy. I mean, is that really a bad faith circumstance?
It is when the tenant already had the knowledge that required a change to the status quo. It's like a situation where you're selling a house.
How would the tenant know that this is going to be a big surprise to the landlord?
Well, because cutting holes in a 40-year-old roof is always a big surprise, both in terms of structural analysis.
You know, my wife and her remodeling projects would strongly disagree with you. I just don't think that's necessarily so.
Well, let me put it this way. Both the architect who had been involved in redesign of 350 mostly pre-existing buildings surely would know, the architect of the tenant would surely know, that relocating a 750-pound unit, four of them in different areas, is going to impact the structure as well as simply the risk of cutting a hole, additional holes in the roof membrane of this 40-year-old building. So the concerns were twofold.
If that's so commonly known, why wouldn't your client either put some limitations or ask some questions before signing?
They didn't think about it because it wasn't discussed. It wasn't raised as an issue. It's like the home buyer and seller situation, for example. A buyer's buying a home, doesn't tell the seller that they intend to operate some kind of business out of the home, and then later complains that the restrictive covenants for the subdivision prohibit operating a business out of the home. If it's the buyer who's got the change in the status quo, the buyer who's got the particular use in mind for the property, and the seller just thinks that the buyer's going to buy the house to live in it. And so for them, there's no red flag.
Well, this is different, though. The seller, the lessor here, knew that the buyer wanted to change the HVAC system and had the ability to ask questions.
But there's no evidence of that. And the trial court made no finding that there was any conversation, discussion, expectation, contemplation whatsoever about relocating those units. The landlord just made the logical assumption that they knew they had to put in new units because the existing units were shot. And they knew what the capacity had to be, at least 47.5 tons, and actually the units they ordered were 60 tons, so exceeded the requirement. And they just assumed that they would put the units in the locations of the existing units and that would satisfy the requirement. The installer, the contractor, testified that that would work just fine in terms of functionality. And the tenant's own architect, when testifying, said that it would work, but it's not optimum. The only thing he said it was optimum. Did he evaluate in terms of efficiency? Is it going to increase the electric bill or the gas bill or something? No, it's negligible. It's like running water through a hose. If it's a 5/8-inch hose and you run water through the hose, it doesn't matter whether it's 50 feet long or 100 feet long. The amount coming out the other end of the hose is the same, and the rate of flow is exactly the same, assuming no leaks in the hose.
I'm assuming a high enough head of water to maintain the pressure. You'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Larry Trivett on behalf of the respondent, Lucky Star. Our argument's extremely straightforward in this matter. What is taking place is that the appellant has seriously not challenged the findings of the trial court. There were some 47 findings, some 12 conclusions. Appellant comes before this court and has generally argued a conclusionary statement without citing the record, without doing anything to come forth with any facts which would show that those findings of fact and conclusions of law were not supported by substantive evidence. Just as, and with all due respect to Mr. Tainville today, to make a general argument without any support in the record about whatsoever. That is the problem with the appeal in this case. The evidence at the trial court was clear. You have the lease agreement before you. You have the Exhibit B as to the language that was agreed upon by the parties. Most of the arguments in respondents' belief should, in fact, be disregarded because they have not been properly brought before this court. To come before you and just generally argue conclusionary statements without any citation to any part of the record should not be allowed. It's not appropriate. Their statement of facts are essentially the court's findings of fact. They're not challenged in this case. So from the standpoint of where we are, the agreement was proved. It was accepted by the trial court. If you look at the case law here in the state of Washington, does the lease contain the material terms necessary for enforcement? Absolutely. Does the lease agreement, is it one that can be specifically enforced by the trial court? Absolutely. There's no question about those arguments.
Why couldn't we conclude that the language of the agreement simply says that the units were to be replaced, not relocated, and that's the end of it.
Because that's not what the lease agreement provides for. The lease agreement states that those RTUs and that HVAC system was going to be installed pursuant to the tenants, the respondents' specifications provided by its architect.
Well, that's the interior design of the ductwork that attaches to the existing locations of the rooftop unit.
With all due respect, that's not what it says, Your Honor. Okay? Because it actually...
It doesn't have the specificity that either of you argue for.
I would disagree with you respectfully on that one also. I believe that it does. I believe that with regard to the exhibit, with regard to what was to be installed, the exhibit described the types of units that were going to be in place. There was nothing mentioned with regard to simply the interior of the building. We know that those units...
Looking at that language, read it and conclude that it only described replacing the HVAC units that existed.
No.
Would that be a reasonable reading of it?
No, it would not. And the reason for that is it indicates that was a discretionary term. There were both non-discretionary items within the work that was to be performed and some discretionary items.
What words would you point to in the exhibit that would tell us that it involves relocation rather than replacement?
That the units were to be installed pursuant to the tenant's specifications and plans provided by its architect. That was a discretionary item. They knew that they were granting discretion to the tenant's Lucky Stars architect to design the system and would have discretion to do so.
Well, let me give you a kind of a silly hypothetical. I'm going to buy a car, a used car, and we know the engine doesn't work. So I'm going to have a new engine put in, but I want something a little better than what's in it. So we're going to have a new engine put in to my design and specifications. Wouldn't you think it would still go under the hood and I wasn't going to end up with a rear engine car with the engine in the trunk?
Yes. Subject to condition.
This is a 40-year-old building with apparently HVAC system that's been in the same place on the roof for a very long time. Why would you think it's going to be somewhere else?
Because I have made the decision. First of all, whether or not I'm going to believe it's going to be someplace else is not the primary question.
Well, counsel suggests that that's a pretty startling proposition that you would move it. And if you knew you were going to, you ought to tell somebody. Otherwise, you're not acting in good faith. I think that's his argument.
With regard to the record, Your Honor, we know that the principals of Kent Hill had the opportunity to examine and view what had taken place at the Renton facility, which had the same general outline with regard to the units.
Had they been moved in the Renton facility?
I don't believe that that is contained within the record, but the general layout.
What was the clue that things were going to be in a different place?
That was not part of the record. But once you enter into an agreement, you and I enter into an agreement, you give me discretion to design that system. Now, my design...
You're selling me your house. I have it inspected. You've got an electric furnace, and the inspector says it's out of date, needs to be replaced. And so we agree that I can have a new furnace based on my design and specs.
Mm-hmm.
Does it go in the furnace room, or can I put a heat pump out in the backyard?
If it's reasonable, yes. If it's reasonable. And that is the question. That's what the case law tells us. When two parties contract and they enter into an agreement and one party has discretion with regard to what's going to take place, the question is, did they exercise it in good faith? And there's no evidence in this case whatsoever, none in the record, none has been identified by the appellant that Lucky Star exercised or engaged in any type of bad faith whatsoever. It relied upon the contract terms. It hired its architect. Its architect examined the building. It designed a system. It was a generally accepted system. It met Lucky Star's needs, and it didn't cause any problems for the building. That's the trial testimony. What is being offered to you today is not supported by the record. We rely upon the record, period. Appellant's brief doesn't cite except general arguments to this court. This court must rely upon the trial record, and in our opinion, it should be affirmed in all respects. I cannot see where any evidence has been presented in any way, shape, or form whatsoever to seriously dispute or argue against the findings of fact. And in fact, the appellant has not raised any argument against the findings of fact, except to raise conclusionary arguments that either the lease is unenforceable because the parties had no meeting of the minds, which is not supported by the record, that somehow economic waste was committed because the RTU units had to be moved. That is not submitted or supported by the record in any way, shape, or form. The argument of damages was not argued. None of the arguments placed before this court have been made with any degree of specificity. The record is supported by the evidence. The trial judge's decision in this matter should be, in fact, enforced, and we ask for an award of attorney's fees, just as we received at the trial court in this matter. And a specific performance was an appropriate remedy and should, in fact, be decreed. Thank you.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you. I want to talk for just a minute about fairness, because the architect visited the site in May, the month before the lease was signed, and at that point, the architect testified that he determined that he would require relocation of the RTUs. And at that point, he should have raised a red flag and said, wait a minute, don't sign the lease yet. We've got to iron out this area of where the RTUs should be placed. And within 2 weeks after the signing of the lease, he produced a one-page schematic that would have disclosed the relocation of the RTUs. That should have been done before the lease was signed. So what we have here is a lack of meeting of the minds, and it is putting the engine of the car in the trunk instead of the front of the car. It's unreasonable and absurd. So where that comes into play is only if you find that there is a contract and that the contract is subject to specific performance, and then that specific performance of a discretionary term must be exercised in good faith. Good faith includes what's reasonable and customary in the industry, and the testimony was you replace the existing RTUs. You don't punch new holes in a 40-year-old building. The risk to the membrane and the structural analysis and retrofitting would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the
Before this lawsuit was filed, did your client ever take the position that there was no lease?
Not before the lawsuit was filed, no.
Do we look to the party's behavior at all to determine whether or not there are sufficient facts to prove some meeting of the minds? It seems to me that you and the other side are arguing about what the words on the piece of paper mean and what you agreed to, not whether you had an agreement.
The performance of the parties doesn't create a contract. That's a matter of law. The performance of the parties.
The contract is a question of law, but can we look to the conduct of the parties to help inform that analysis?
You look to the performance of the parties to help explain any ambiguity in the contract as reflected by the party's performance being the best evidence of what the party's intentions were. The landlord's position consistently, both before and after the lawsuit was started, is we're not going to move those RTUs, and we don't have to move those RTUs because it's beyond the scope of what was contemplated by the parties. You never told us that was a requirement, and we certainly wouldn't think of that on our own, that you'd move RTUs on a 40-year-old building. And the landlord's position was consistent, not that there was no contract, but that they did not have the right, the tenant did not have the right to require relocation. I'll rest there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Our next case is